Off the Ball, GAA.
Does anyone here think Millwall are going to win the All-Ireland final? No, thank you. So that question is nonsense. If the Barca supporters want to enjoy it, let them enjoy it.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50mg film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150mg tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Do you know, I just realised a few minutes ago, this is only Spain's second World Cup semi-final ever.
Good record in semi-finals then.
Isn't that mad? So they've been in loads of European championships, semis and finals. But just the one 2010.
Yeah, we were just chatting about weddings. So they're not quite always the bridesmaid, never the bride. Mm. They're probably further down the list, maybe so when the third choice bridesmaid.
When they get there, they're good. But getting there is a problem for Spain. I believe everyone's fitting well, right? All the superstars of both.
Yeah, you could say that. Nico Williams hasn't really been fit the full tournament. He's sort of getting up to speed. Lamine Yamal is kind of fully fit, if you could call it that.
I still think he looks like he's carrying something. Mm. He's playing like a player who's slightly out of form. The 2006 game, Sky outside, we're doing the team sheets from them. Spain had a very good team. France won 3-1. Mm-hmm. Dan scored in the 92nd minute. Patrick Vieira scored in the 83rd minute. Frank Ribéry scored in the 41st minute. But David Villa had put Spain ahead. I think that maybe if they'd won that game, they might have gone on to win it.
Yeah. But it did them no harm, I suppose, the next three tournaments, which they won. They were building up nicely to that.
I'm just trying to find the actual full team there. But.
And get for you here.
So that is that game you're reading out there. That's the last 16 in the World Cup 2006.
Yeah, so obviously France go on to beat Brazil and then go all the way to the final where Zidane gets sent off for the headbutt. Yeah.
And amazingly, that's their only previous World Cup meeting, France and Spain.
I have it here. So we've got Iker Casillas in goals, Ramos right back, Puyol and Ibanez and Pereña. Then we've got Xavi, Fabregas and Xabi Alonso. Raul, David Villa and Fernando Torres up front.
That's a good team.
That's a pretty good team.
Joaquin came off the bench. What a player.
Luis Garcia and Marcus Senna came off the bench as well. Took Xavi off. Might have been a mistake.
Iniesta on the bench. Didn't even get on.
That was McAlealy, Zidane, Ribéry, Vieira, Florent Malouda and Thierry Henry up front for...
It's a good few of lads, isn't there?
Pascal they are now, on the bench for... France.
Fabien Barthez in goals for France.
Yeah, Barthez, 2006 in goal.
Lilian Thuram still playing.
Willie Sagnol.
And William Gallas, star of the documentary.
I was watching some of the best World Cup semi-final goals last night in history. Lilian Thuram scores a brace against Croatia in 1998. His first
extra time.
Two goals for France.
Was it?
I don't know about extra time. But the you know the left footed curler outside the box, iconic celebration where he's on his knees. Has the chin-stroking contemplative look, which is copied
friend
several
of the show,
times
Lilian Thuram.
Throughout the 21st century. Indeed he is. Indeed.
Twice.
Really?
Sons are festooning when football.
Was that? Before your time, you know.
Oh, well, I got her Dutch,
football only started in
1992
here.
What? That is like not even a great correlation there at all.
No, it totally is. It's the Premier League. Football only started.
When he started when I came in. Yeah. Is that long ago?
I can't actually remember.
Okay.
Maybe 6 years.
Okay.
He wrote a series of books. Sorry, other...
It'll take a lot to beat the best semi-final goal ever, which is 2010. Giovanni van Bronckhorst for the Netherlands against Uruguay.
Uruguay.
And he's about 35 yards out on the left-hand side. Smashes it in. There you are now. There's the France-Croatia highlights front. Yeah, I love that numbering on the France jersey. Yeah, that fan. It's class.
Kit is savage, like.
But actually not too many unbelievable goals in the semi-finals because we were chatting there pre-show about are you looking forward to this game? Whatever about a semi-final, my standards for performance drops massively because I appreciate the significance of the event and how much there is to lose. So I'm always intrigued by a semi-final, but I remember very few of them.
Yeah, well, it was very funny when we were chatting to Jim Gavin on Friday's show and somebody put the quotes to him from David Brady about Mayo, I think Div Brady had said something along the lines of Mayo need to lose one to win one. And Jim sort of scoffed at it. And he was like, no, just go and win it. That's what you need to do. You need to go win it. So, I mean, that's kind of what these two sides need to do now. Like, there's no... We saw France demolish sides across this tournament and play beautiful football, and Spain haven't really reached the heights that we might have thought they would, but ultimately, it doesn't matter if France play beautiful football tonight, as long as they go and win the game and get to the final. Losing a final is less hurtful than losing a semi-final.
Do you think so?
I think so.
I would take a semi-final defeat all day. I think if you're going to get to the final, you've got to win it. Like, just that, even that runners-up medal, that walk beforehand, like, I'd hate the idea of a losing final.
I'm not saying
semi-final, like, we can go one better next time.
It's definitely not good to lose a final, but you can potentially say, look, we're on par with this side. It's a final, one-off game. If you don't perform, sometimes things happen. Well, the semi-final is more of a, you know, you are falling short if you get to a semi-final and you don't get to the final. I don't think that you could be accused of falling short if you don't win a final.
I don't know. I prefer, like, look, Croatia got the 2018 World Cup final. That was class for them and all that.
Yeah, it's all contextual, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. If you're favourites and all that, you get to the final, you're like...
I'm not mad on finals in general.
Yeah, in terms of...
Just as a concept, like, it's sort of... just
caught it after the semi.
Yeah, no, obviously I know the final has to come, but I don't, like, enjoy it as much. I enjoy everything else more because it means it's over. It's like, regardless of what happens, no matter how good it is, it's over. That's it. Then you have to go back to, like, normal stuff.
Funny enough, we got a taste of that yesterday. And last Wednesday, was it, that didn't have a match on? Forgot what I did in my evenings when there wasn't football.
Nah, but that's different though, because you know it's going to come back. Like, it's different now because it's like there's nothing on yesterday, but we know there's a game today.
It's like a therapy session for you.
Yeah, but no, when Sunday comes around, then like the hurling is over and then the World Cup is over.
And the golf all in the same day.
The golf is over and then you're kind of going...
Somewhere's
right.
Over.
Essentially. And then you have to look forward to some dreary Premier League stuff for the next 12 months, having the same conversations about the same players and same teams.
And referees.
And VAR and referees, exactly, yeah. Not to be forgotten. So that's what you have to look forward to after Sunday. So enjoy this week. Make sure you enjoy it.
What about third place playoff game on Saturday? Do you remember when RT would give that to après match?
Yeah, that's class.
In full.
Unbelievable. I remember the Netherlands-Brazil one that time.
I don't remember any third place game. So, like, say now, Italian 90, right, going way back. Did England win? Did they come third? Did they get the medal?
In my head.
Somebody out there will remember that. Who came third in the 2022 World Cup?
Some controversy over...
Immediately forgotten about.
Croatia-Morocco, was it?
Would have been Morocco anyway, for sure, as one of the teams.
Yeah, Croatia lost Argentina, but I have no idea how that game went. I remember
Morocco finished third, isn't that their thing?
You get a medal, don't you? You get a bronze. Right,
yeah. Croatia beat Morocco bronze.
I remember the Brazil Holland one, and was that 2014? I remember that one because that was after a match, and I think Holland won that 3-0.
And so 2002 would have been South Korea and Turkey.
Yeah.
In the third place game. Couldn't tell you.
Yeah.
Maybe have a feeling possibly Turkey. Just told there that England did lose the Italian 90 third place game.
Why did they do it?
Why do they do it?
There's a gold, silver, bronze. Every sport has three people on the podium.
I can take you through the last third place winners if you want. Got them here. Belgium won it in 2018.
Yeah.
Netherlands in 2014 beat Brazil 3-0 in the final.
Oh, was a good recall there.
Germany 3-2, 2010.
Against Uruguay.
Right. 2006, Germany again. They beat Portugal 3-1 in the final, in the third place playoff. 2002, have a stab.
Germany beat Portugal. South Korea won.
South Korea were in it.
I think Turkey won.
Turkey won a 3-2.
All right.
That's
98, Croatia 2-1, Netherlands. And I won't go back further in 94. Actually, you wanted to know Italian 90. Italian 90, it was 2-1 to England.
Who scored?
2-1 to Italy, sorry, against England.
Who scored?
I don't have the goal scores.
That's the iconic celebration there, yeah.
Sweden won in 94. 4-0 against Bulgaria. What a clash that was.
The Grasso goal, obviously, World Cup semi-final goals.
It's a brilliant goal.
Italy versus
Germany. Yeah, that was they were tomorrow as well, that one, and the City celebration.
Yeah, it's class, yeah.
What this is the Lillian Schramm celebration, France tied 8 against Croatia, which is readily available for all to consume.
Tardelli, yes.
It's great. Right? It's, well, Tardelli, as opposed to Tardelli, mental, well, Schramm, the opposite.
Yeah.
Yeah. The 2006 semi-final World Cup, you were at that.
Yes.
That was one of the great matches.
That was.
You were talking about looking forward to a semi-final. That had everything, that semi-final. I remember that referee that night, who I think was Uruguayan, let so much go, wasn't falling for any of the players' antics, and the players realised that really early on in that game. I remember that, and a lot of the diving stopped, and then the football took over. So you had the Grasso winner, and then Del Piero sealed it, didn't he?
I can't remember that.
I think someone, was it like Yaquinta or something, laid it off to Del Piero, and he curled it in top corner. Oh, magical. Magical game. And Piero's assist for Grasso's goal.
Yeah, that was good.
Del Piero scored.
It was
120 plus one.
Yeah.
Pirlo could do so very good.
Yeah, that was a nice little semi-final.
Balance.
That is probably the great semi final.
Complimented her well.
That I could think of. England Croatia 2018 was interesting.
What was the other semi? It was France. France and Italy go through to the finals. Germany beat who in the third place playoff, you say? Portugal. I don't remember. Portugal must have been travelling.
That was. Was that the. Is that 06 you're talking about? Was that was when there was the England year, wasn't it? So Ronaldo Rooney, the red guy.
Oh yeah, yeah. So
Germany,
it was a quarter.
Germany, Italy, in one of them. Who was the other one?
Portugal,
France.
Yeah. The point is here, Dermot Keenan is complaining that we're talking about the third place game, but it gets forgotten about a lot.
Ah, Dermot, don't be.
And rightly so. Rightly so.
I don't know. It is such a useless game. Yeah, I'm exactly interested in it.
Yeah.
I definitely won't watch it. But the point is, I like the idea of it.
I won't watch a minute of that. Like,
does this not poo-poo the whole notion of losing here is better than losing the final? Because if you lose here, you still have to get up.
It's a torturous thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
But you have the freedom of knowing that nobody cares. You can do whatever you want in this game.
Yeah, but you just want to go. You haven't even had a holiday.
No, exactly. And you're now stuck with this.
You're already on the holiday by the time the third place game.
You're stuck with this bunch of chumps who you've just fallen out with.
Yeah.
In the biggest moment of your life, they've let you down. And you have to go back in and sit in the dressing room with them, breathe the same air as them, listen to the same shit jokes. No, you've had enough. You're going home.
They won't drop it, you know.
No, I'm not saying they will. That's why losing today is nowhere near as bad as losing the final, I think.
We'll end up with fourth and fifth place getting certificates now. Giovanni
get something for everyone.
Rank the whole tournament. Yeah, yeah.
They're trying to eventually turn into a school sports day, and that's what they're on the way to doing.
Mm.
I like it personally. And it coincides anyway tonight, France, Spain, 8 o'clock, with Shamrock Rovers, the return leg 2-0 down in the Champions League qualifier. And Pico Lopez is back.
Yeah.
So this game, right, is on LOI TV only, and it starts at the exact same time as France, Spain. I noted that in Tala, they've driven a truck around blaring the Champions League music to market this game so that people will watch this or, more to the point, attend it. But Pico is back.
You get a few people over at it, I'd say, extra people if the weather's good and Pico's going to be there. There'll be a few kids, I'd say, looking to go that maybe wouldn't have been looking to go.
Throw on the notifications on the phone. Yeah. Michael, wait for the England-Argentina semi-final tomorrow.
It's a massive game.
Yeah, it's absolutely huge. Yeah,
you get if they lose this, so they're 2-0 down. They have it all to play for.
Yeah,
if they lose, they go to the second qualifying round of the Conference League. I think.
Yeah, it's not ideal because as we had said this the other week, it's these are the games you want to be winning to give yourself that bit of leeway when you get
and
further
for next into season it. For the coefficients. Yeah. Like just this kind of it's a massive slide in momentum if they lose, and then it just makes it harder to qualify for the Conference League.
Yeah,
like one of these years, somebody's going to qualify for a Europa League, and it starts by winning this round and maybe one more round and then dropping down to that playoff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so in other League of Ireland related news, John Russell, Shells, pro Sligo Rovers.
Jeez. Mad news.
Poor old Sligo Rovers.
I think it was the tide turning ever so slightly.
Well, it was a good time for John Russell to get out.
I think it's a good for him. I think it's definitely a positive. It's just we don't really know what John Russell is. We don't know what his style of football can actually be because the job he's doing at Sligo is so wide ranging.
Exactly,
he does everything, and he's also on a shoestring sort of budget in comparison to some of the other teams. So if he's given a few quid and he's given, you know, the license to actually be the manager as opposed to everything else, which I'm sure he took on the role very seriously and enjoyed that to a degree, but there's probably a different side to him here that we might get to see, but it could backfire heavily as well.
This is in reference to when he was on with us.
He was telling us this, he did everything
at Sligo Rovers.
Yeah,
it was one of those old school totalitarian managers, and now he has an opportunity to play or manage in a system. You'd imagine for Shells to have something set up for him. It's very exciting for John Russell.
I think it's great for Shells.
It is good for Shells, but
I think it's really great for Shells.
Like Matthew says, we'll see.
Jack Henry plays football.
It was time to get out. Look, Waterford looked totally doomed this year, and they've come back. Now Sligo are at the foot of the table. But it's an interest. It was kind of what would you describe Shells' business like? Not sneaky. It was smart. It was like, we already have a guy here in the league and he's young. Let's see what he's like. I didn't see it coming.
Always impressive character whenever we talk to him.
Really good talker.
There was an element to me that thought Shells might go down the route of bringing in some guy none of us have ever heard of, you know.
Yeah, and that was certainly what the speculation was, wasn't it? And then randomly David Healy just in advance of the Linfield game. Like, that's a very old school. Mm. We're going to unsettle the manager of the team we're about to play.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, if now he's, you know, hell hath no fury like a David Healy scorned.
Mm.
So you're dicing with death there, but
it'll
add further salt to that rivalry.
It's only France tonight, is it, in this room? Anyone for Spain?
I think we can all have the view that France are going to win, but I wouldn't think any of us would be surprised if Spain turned them over. You know, it's such a contrast in styles, I think, and it's such an obvious thing to say, but I do just think France they're like a Swiss Army knife. They can beat you whatever way they want, really, whatever game state they're in.
I've had concerns about their central midfield before the tournament started. I still have those concerns in a game like tonight where Spain won't be carrying a passenger the way Portugal were, and so you can see how they won't have enough opportunity. Then it comes down to moments of magic from their front three/four.
Yeah, I think Rodri's been very good for Spain, but I don't think Pedri's been anywhere near what you know he can be. So there's a world where he does turn up and things do change, but he hasn't been good at all. I don't think.
They dropped him for the last game, didn't they?
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see. And they do have quality on the bench to come off. So I it's going to extra time. That's what I think.
Yeah.
Do you reckon? Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
And the balance of probability. If you'd back draws in all the quarterfinals, you'd be
doing all right. Yeah.
They just don't know each other at World Cups that well. So it's interesting too. Yeah. Although they played each other in the Euros semis, I think.
The Nations League 5-4.
And their Nations League regular.
The Nations League final prior to that as well. Yeah.
Story altogether here.
It'll probably be the first time we'll see what France can do when they don't have the ball.
Arguably, that's more frightening. Mm. On paper, they look a far more dangerous team without the ball than with it, but they've been managing to do it with the ball as well. I think you're right about the midfield, yeah. On paper, it's not A1, shall we say, but it's been performing pretty well. I know Deschamps said that Tchouaméni is going to be available, but he's not quite 100% fit. And then follow that up by saying, this is a World Cup semi-final.
You've got to play. Yeah.
If you're even remotely fit, you're
unless you're Thibaut Courtois,
you're going to turn off. Unless you're Courtois, yeah.
The thing about talking about football at the moment, right, is that to your point about you're not mad about finals because it's the symbol of it being all over. It's like the World Cup is a lot of fun. I'm enjoying it a lot. Whereas you think about the Premier League, just even thinking about Premier League transfers, you're kind of turned off by the whole thing. Like, oh, jeez. And then yesterday we're shocked. You're really kind of shocked by a transfer, especially within the league, of Youri Tielemans, sir.
Yeah. That's a pain in the hole, isn't it?
So this guy had a pretty low release clause that transpired.
Yeah, I presume Villa do that so that they can keep players who they think, I don't know. It seems like bad business.
My initial thought was surely that's a player agent thing. Put in a low enough release clause so I can go if I want.
Yeah, but why would you agree to it?
I don't know.
No, it's like, we have you over a barrel, Aston Villa. You're paying me 250 grand a week, which is more than I would have got anywhere else. But obviously they signed him for nothing, right? So maybe... I know that at one point David Myler used to come in and tell us that he was sure he was going to end up at Liverpool because he was a perfect Liverpool player and he would have been great there. And maybe there was a lot of competition and they were like, okay, Grant, you come and sign for us and we'll put in a low release clause. And that rolled over. I don't know. Maybe that's the way. But they're getting 10 million for Luka Dean from Paris Saint-Germain. Dean's 32. I actually thought both those players, they could have sold for more than that. You know, Dean was linked with Saudi at one point and maybe the Saudi money is drying up. But they've signed those two players, or they sold those two players for 45 million. They've signed a 20-year-old, or they might be about to sign a 20-year-old. I haven't seen that fully confirmed just yet.
Yeah.
And it's not really how Unai Emery works. He gets 20-year-olds in the building, plays them for four games, and then they get buried somewhere around Spaghetti Junction.
You're on loan at Palace come January.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know. I think this could be the beginning of the end for Emery.
Really?
Just feels like he's so good.
Yeah.
The rules are so stacked against him. So what's going to happen here is Villa will have a reasonable run in the Champions League. They won't qualify for Europe next season. And then, funnily enough, that'll be the year that they can actually pile a load of money in because they won't be paying the UEFA fines. So it'll be 3 years down the line where they'll have a squad that he might be interested in.
You'd be worried about the midfield, wouldn't you? Know, with obviously Tielemans gone, Onana's badly injured, and Kamara can't play a full season.
Well, they think Kamara's going to be ready for pre-season or September at the latest.
He just tends to get injured, though, more.
He does. Well, look, that's I think this is a second ACL. Or it turned out not to be an ACL this time. It was that, so it's slightly better.
Yeah,
I half expect to wake up in 2 days' time and hear that John McGinn is joining Celtic for 1.5 million. That's like, we're just doing him a favour because he's been so good to us. It's
positive thinking from a Celtic perspective.
This isn't how you run things.
It's an interesting move from Man United because, as you said, Villa got him for free a couple of years ago, and Man United were very heavily linked with him, and they decided not to go for it. Whereas now they've gone for it and he's further down the line. But from a Man United perspective, they were in competition to sign Matias Fernandes, who eventually signs for Tottenham for 85 million. Man United have gone and got Andre Santos for 50 million and now Tielemans for 35 million. So they've got two midfielders in place of what they would have spent for one player. And The Athletic put this out in terms of defensive line breaks from passes. Yuri Tielemans is top of the list in terms of last year. Matias Fernandes is bottom of the list. And funny enough, the top seven includes Tielemans, who has signed for United, Andre Santos, who has signed for United, Casemiro, who was a United player, and Bruno Fernandes. And then Adam Wharton was the other player, and Elliot Anderson is in there as well. So two players that they were linked with. So it clearly shows what Man United are looking for in their midfield. I think they've got a player now who can actually pass the ball and control the game and control the pace of the game. He's definitely still needs some more legs in there, but I'm certainly more positive about the midfield now than you would have been a week ago.
I wonder what state he's in, obviously, with the injury. It's obviously not too bad if they've decided to go and sign him, but it just seems a bit odd that they pulled out the Ederson deal because they're convinced he has some form of injury. But they've gone inside.
It was very non-specific, that information. Or did you see? Yeah, it was like, we did a second medical.
Yeah.
Decided not to progress.
And now Atlanta.
Welcome back to you later in the summer.
Yeah, but Atlanta are trying to get him to sign a new deal, so they're obviously convinced there's nothing wrong with him. It was very strange. But I think, I don't know. Man United,
I'd say,
fan.
Maybe they found out the 35 million fee for Tielemans was a real thing and were like, is there a problem with the medical?
Do you think that this goes to show that United still has that pull factor no matter what state the club is in? Because, like you said, Tielemans is extremely well paid at Villa. He's a hero there. Why would he leave?
Well, when you say no matter what state they're in, it's Champions League.
And that's enough?
Yeah.
They're on the up and up, you would say.
It's hard to know. It's very, very
in
early
the
days.
Cyclical cycle that are.
But they're also one of the biggest clubs in the world, of course. Like, yeah, you absolutely.
I think that was more evidenced with Cesco last summer. When Newcastle were in the Champions League and Man United weren't, and he decided, I want to play for
Man United. Fernandes goes to Spurs, right, Matheus Fernandes. But like Tielemans, I thought he would have had it all.
It's a fair point, yeah, but this is big money.
Not everyone does that, like, but because a lot of players don't want to fall into the trap of United. Like, I want to be like, there's absolutely no guarantees this goes well under Carrick. Like, we don't know. We don't know what Carrick's like as a permanent manager other than Middlesbrough. So let's see what happens there, playing every 3 days. I'm surprised he wants to go. I think it's a great signing. I thought he would have stayed at Villa. Maybe, like you say, maybe he sees the beginning of the end here.
It's hard to know.
Maybe he just wants to play for United. I don't know. But you still want to play for the institution, not what the club is at the moment.
He's 29 as well, so maybe it's one of them.
Last chance.
It's great to play for United for a lot of these guys at some point in your career, regardless of the
state. Yeah, I mean, Yuri Tielemans did not grow up dreaming of being an Aston Villa fan. There's a good chance that at some stage, Man United flickered on the TV in Belgium in one of those big Champions League nights. He's like, well, that is good. Oh, look at that.
I think that's exactly what I'm getting at, is that this is what happens with this club. Like, is that they're still able to attract players of quality. Because if you look at all the signings in the last 13 years since Alex Ferguson's gone, if you actually, on paper, do the starting 11, it's unbelievable. It's an unbelievable team considering everyone they've accumulated, and almost all of them haven't worked out.
But many of them didn't get at their peak.
Yeah. You know.
So like,
but there were still quality players at times. You still have, like, you're not about, like, say, not getting certain players to beat, like Lukaku. Like, we're still talking about Lukaku all these years later. Still a very good goal scorer, Premier League, and Pogba and Zlatan. Di Maria, you know, like all these quality players. Didn't work out?
It seems to be a very sensible signing, though, to be fair. And I know you the reservations you might have about Carrick and not knowing exactly what you're going to get with him. I think the likes of Tielemans and the likes of Santos are players that, even if things do not work out for Carrick in the very near future,
yeah, it could be great.
They're fine. Do you know, like, any manager, I think, would be happy enough to have someone like Tielemans on their side.
Oh, yeah. He's excellent. He's really excellent.
I'm just looking here at a picture of the Europa League in 2017. United played Anderlecht. Michael Carrick is shaking hands with Tielemans. Very young Youri Tielemans.
If they go and sign another player in midfield, it's probably that the mix that they went for in the forward line last year when they were rebuilding it with the obviously Cunha and Mbeumo, Premier League proven, you know what you're getting from them. Then Sesko, you're getting that level of youth and development. You're getting that with Santos. Tielemans, you know what you're getting from. If they go and sign another midfielder now who is either a Premier League current player or a player who has played at the top level, that's sort of similar.
We have months to talk about this, though, right?
We should talk about it.
France and Spain's on tonight. It's World Cup semi-final.
One more thing we should talk about with the Premier League before we move off it is that Liverpool do have a new manager, Andone Iraola. He had his first press conference yesterday. He spoke about needing new players, what he wants to achieve at the club, sort of the pressure that comes with being Liverpool manager, but also what he hopes to get from it from a personal perspective. And essentially, he wants to stay true to himself here, lads.
I will try to be the same coach. I understand that I will maybe make mistakes here. I will say things that I shouldn't. But you cannot be all the time, you know, thinking exactly, don't tell this, don't. I think you have to be yourself. You have to be yourself, and I will try to be. Obviously, I cannot say everything here to you. There are some things that you can keep. You have to keep private, but especially with the players. No, I know that we will have big personalities, big egos, big. But I will try not to change with them. Also, yes.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm
Joni,
Beth from ESPN. Just following on from that, in terms of your character, your personality, what can fans expect from you? What kind of personality or character would you say that you have as a coach?
Well, it's the most difficult question, probably, no? Try to describe yourself. I don't like to do this at all. I think you have the advantage that you've already seen me 3 years at least in the Premier League. I think everyone kind of, some of them will know me better. The others maybe they don't know me, but the people involved in football, more or less, they will know what we are going to try to do. Obviously, I understand that this is Liverpool. We have to change some things. We have to change a little bit, even tactically, even on the pitch, even. But if they sign me, it's because they want a lot of things that I was doing before in other clubs. So I wouldn't like to change in the pitch the DNA of what have been my teams and also outside. How I'm going to answer your questions, how I'm going to relate to the supporters, how I'm going to... I think I will try to be as natural as possible, and I hope it doesn't change me a lot.
Came across very well, as does every manager in their first press conference. So we'll see how he gets on. Very earnest, very nice, very sweet he came across in that press conference. Exciting coach for Liverpool to have. I mean, we're talking about France playing nice football, exciting football. I think that's what we're going to get from Liverpool next year under Iraola.
Yeah, yeah. Mayo style. Xabi Alonso also did his first press conference yesterday, says he wants to keep Enzo Fernandez, that they've spoken, but that will also remain private.
And they're trying to get rid of Garnacho, or Garnacho trying to get rid of himself.
What happened specifically?
He's not training.
They want 50 mil from,
and he's refusing to train, is he? Or they're not letting him train, or
in case he gets injured,
he's not training with the first team anyway. He's at nothing as always. Seems like a really great fella to have around the dressing room, doesn't he? Going really well for him now. Everywhere he's been.
They need to stop telling everybody he's an asshole, though, and like, oh no, he's actually good. It's just
it seems that, like, it's funny though, now that's happened twice, that, you know, the smart thing to do would be to just keep this quiet and get as much money as you can from him, but somehow that's not happened, so he must be
well. Yeah, you'd say as well Chelsea are bad at that.
That's true. Yeah true.
Talk about one thing, time back, there was a day that Garnacho had the world at his feet, specifically the day that Cristiano Ronaldo sat down with Piers Morgan. That time, at the end of his Manchester
United
career,
against Fulham.
That day he scored the goal against Fulham at Craven Cottage, and people were like, don't worry about Ronaldo, he can go, you have this kid.
Yeah,
if only he could have that time back.
You mentioned Mayo.
Yep.
Andy Moran
did his press night yesterday.
For the All-Ireland final, and
he thinks that it's inevitable that there will be goal line technology by next year. He seems to be kind of fairly certain of stuff happening. To be fair, we've made huge progress over the last couple of years in Croke Park with the Hawkeye, but I think it's just going to go to goal line and square balls. I think it would take a very minimal amount of time to do that. Like, it couldn't happen a better game than Dublin Kerry game with a full house. Very unfortunate, I suppose, for Dublin and Tyrone over the last few weeks. But those decisions are there and they're highlighted now. I think it's going to automatically come in, to be honest with you. So he's kind of suggesting that this doesn't necessarily require all the machinations of a 5-year subcommittee that reports back and travels the world and finds out the pros and cons, and then it goes to a vote in Congress and some lad presses the wrong button and you have to wait another 5 years. He's like, no, it can just happen. It should be in for the latter stages of next year. I don't think it can be done anywhere else bar a quarterfinal on. I don't think it can be done in any other stadium bar Croke Park, and I think that we've had a really good demonstration with Hawkeye. Maybe once or twice a game, you get it tight and usually it's the right decision to call it. If the umpire had the decision to make, he'd just said, go to Hawkeye and away we go. I mean, the square ball route is relatively complicated in that you'll actually need to know
when the ball left the foot.
You know, which is essentially the same technology as the offsides.
Yeah.
So that's probably not as cheap as the system we have, but you could just get the... I mean, that's for square ball. We could start with, I think we'd all accept, if you have the goal line technology, then the umpires can just be looking for square ball because they don't need to know.
Yeah, I think so. Especially as he says for Croke Park, in that it would only be for the last couple of games. You could actually, even if you really wanted to, stick another umpire there.
A third umpire.
Say, you watch the square. You do nothing.
You could
else.
Do, yeah. You
know, if it was really that difficult, you know.
I see Colm Keyes is making the case against having referees, because you need your umpires to be people that the referee trusts, and that there'll be a level of I think it's unspoken, but there'll be a level of competition between but like, that's fine until you get to quarterfinals and finals and semifinals. I think calls will come for umpires in the biggest match days to be inter-county referees, but being an umpire and being a line umpire and referee have different requirements and positional needs. Referees like to work in teams they trust and know week in, week out. I get that, but there is a bit where you get the best of the best for the biggest games.
Umpiring thing is, I don't know if it's like a kind of unspoken thing in GA circles, but Seamus Flanagan hinted with us as well when he was on with us a few weeks ago, which is like, they're the bodies of the refs. It's almost, it's a favour being done, and it's such a crucial role. You know, whatever about knowing the referees' identities, we know a few refs, you don't know any umpires, like, you know, these are kind of just, you know, faceless people behind almost, and their calls are crucial, and I wonder if they're going to do anything else to make that more official. They probably won't, because it's so difficult. Like, whatever about this time of year, it's much easier when there's so few games played, but, you know, 4 weeks ago when there's like 16 matches on at once, are you ever going to recruit for this? And I say recruit entails money, there's no money involved. It's enticing people who are fans of the sport to make these huge calls. It's a weird thing we have, like, with GA. It's another weird thing about the professionalism and everything but status.
Yeah, and I do think you should, from quarterfinals on, have inter-county referees or trainee inter-county referees. The difficulty then that the referees would say is, so you want my pal to stand in the muck and rain in winter for club games and do the league and do the provincial championships. And then when it gets to the good games, you're saying, no, screw you.
That's a very fair point, yeah.
Yeah, but we are saying that, sorry.
Yeah, yeah. But
do, you know, you're a volunteer. You're just doing it for the, because you love the sport and we get you tickets. We give you tickets for the final.
Might incentivize people to
if your ref gets
go
game,
forward with referee training.
That's fair trade, right?
Possibly.
We just solved that.
There's no course here. There's nothing you can do officially.
Are you sure?
I'm asking. So you're brought to these games
for stewarding or not stewarding umpiring. For umpiring?
I'd say there's training.
Surely you get trained for it.
You need to know the rule book and stuff.
You're saying surely, you're right, but who teaches them? How do you do it? What's about it?
That could that information could be there. I just don't know. Because you do get the odd time an umpire will bring the attention of something to
the referee. We're all saying this now because there was two particularly bad calls, or major calls, controversial ones, whatever you want to call them, in Dublin Kerry.
Well,
and now we're saying, oh, we need to look at the people behind the goals.
No, not necessarily, because it was the same in the Kerry Tyrone game where a 45 was given to Kerry.
The Dermot O'Connor one where he kicked it out, yeah.
Yeah, blatantly wasn't a 45. Yeah. So that's two different games that it's happening as well.
It all evens itself out, though. Everybody from Kerry has told us over the last.
Yeah.
It's all grand.
There are two games in a row, right? But then for the rest of the year, we kind of generally don't really talk about this.
It doesn't mean it's not happening, though.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Just because we're not talking about it doesn't mean it's not happening. We're obviously
it
talking about it.
It happens. It's just lower stakes.
But everyone's hatting it now, right? So it's wants to change it. And then it comes next year, I'm like, oh, yeah, this topic, I forgot about this. I'd be interested to see what they do about this. And what can you even do about it?
For major rule changes, they're going to do nothing about it. For major rule changes or inter-county fixtures, umpires complete e-learning modules and attend provincial training days alongside referees. These courses cover scoring, foul play recognition, umpires' responsibilities and protocols for consulting with the referee. I don't know if they're mandatory, but, you know, I'd say everybody's encouraged to do it.
I'll tell you one fella who's not interested in the VAR discussion when it comes to Gaelic football. James O'Donoghue, speaking on yesterday's football pod.
VAR is not welcome in football. The square ball was a square ball. The penalty decision was at high pace. If you actually take the still of it, it actually almost looks like a free out. What are you saying the third decision was then?
Well, Ross McGarry's effort that hit Mike Breen on the shoulder, and everyone is frozen the frame.
That doesn't look over the line.
I'm with you on that.
And as well, if you're the umpire and we're looking at it in freeze frame, we're still not sure. How in the name of God is he supposed to call it?
Mm.
So the square ball should have probably been given. The other ones are very, very difficult in the split second. But like for VAR, do not come next to football with VAR, please. Imagine the sham of it. It's a sham in professional soccer. Imagine us at it. Some fella in some room in Dublin.
In Dublin.
Not a fan of it. He also had an almighty rant about umpires, if you want to go check that out.
It's so good.
It's phenomenal.
The imagery of some lad in Dublin. It's like, I always had this image of like Stockley Park. I never kind of concept
where it is.
That it would just be like a big building, like I assumed it was like a few lads in like a trailer, like in a car park somewhere. I'd say that's probably more likely for the lad in Dublin than maybe what the lads are doing in the Premier League. But
there is slightly this element though that the Premier League has skewed our view of what a video referee is and what they do and how they do it and how they go about it, because the Premier League reinvented the wheel when it came to it and they did a very bad job of it. So like, there's no guarantee that if...
reinventing the wheel usually means good, doesn't it?
No, but they... just because you reinvent something doesn't mean you do it well. But...
Oh, you're right, though.
They normally
completely changed how VAR or video refereeing was done.
Yeah, yeah.
And people questioned it at the time. So there's no guarantee that if a version of video refereeing came into the GAA... that it would look like Stockley Park, that it would look like how the Premier League do it, have the refs going over to the small screen. In rugby, we've got the TMO, the referee watches on the big screen along with them.
Yeah.
They're able to rewind it, they're able to show the referee in time what's happening.
Yeah, but it's not what you want to GA either, though.
Completely agree with that. When it comes to the likes of like the goal line technology, that's an automatic thing that you can set up.
Yeah.
Probably don't have any issue with that. if it came to, I'm just making the argument, I'm totally against VAR in every sport.
Yeah, yeah.
But I do think that if it comes to it, there's no reason why the GAA need to copy the Premier League model for it. They can copy many other sports and how they went about it. And yeah, they could maybe do a better job of it, because
yeah, totally,
there are like, loads of things that GAA do better than a lot of different sports.
Like maybe it's simple, it doesn't really require VAR. It requires goal line technology, which it seems like they can pretty much do quite easily if they want to. And it's such a freak occurrence, that thing where did it cross the line or not? How often do you even talk about that in GAA every year? So it'll really be nothing. And then the rest of it is just you're asking umpires who are standing behind the goal who don't have an angle at certain things to make a call on behalf of the game. And like James Donoghue said, it's actually very difficult. So I'm not even having a go at umpires myself. Like, I'm just talking about like the square ball thing. Like everyone's saying that's absolutely definitely was a square ball. That we had a much better view on TV, for example, than the umpire did, is behind the goal, because you can't see the lines or the angle.
Yeah.
And oftentimes they make great calls for games where you're like, oh, gee, I didn't even see that happening. But there seems to be a growing frustration with umpires and how the game's been ruined. And like the Dublin Kerry aftermath was all about the decisions, wasn't it?
I think maybe as time goes on, Dublin will look at themselves and they're in it. In fairness, Gerard Burnley said there was two things. It was the referees and it was us.
I know you talked about this at length yesterday, but there is that 40th minute mark where Conor Callaghan has the, not quite a one-on-one, but it's a great save by Shane Murphy, and then the square ball goal happens, I think, seconds later. So that's a huge swing.
And then they kick two twos then.
Yeah, and like Dublin are a bit 3 points clear at the start of the second half. They're doing very well. Yeah. They get it back to 3 points at the end of the game before David Clifford gets the insurance point. So there's loads of turning events that, but Dublin turned out, had a pretty good year, and as recently as the Leinster final against Westmeath, it was a disaster.
Yeah,
it was a bad first year under Brennan.
And Ger Brennan was saying, "Lads, don't make any rash decisions.
Yeah.
It's a big year. Don't make it. Just take a beat.
Take 6 weeks."
Yeah,
Kieran Kilkenny took 6 hours and retired from intercounty football yesterday.
Yeah, I think.
Well, he had a private last dance, I'd say, all season long.
Yeah,
I'd say he was gone regardless.
Yeah. I was saying this to Matthew earlier, and I mean this in the best possible way, but I was thinking about Kieran Kilkenny's career, and it's a credit to him that he did manage to do so. But there's no reason on face value why Kieran Kilkenny was such a successful footballer and why he was so good for the Dubs, because he's not technically the best shooter for a forward. He doesn't have electric pace. Granted, he has an amazing engine, but he wasn't a physical specimen, really. So there's nothing about him that really stands out as a seven. I mean physical as in fast.
He's an incredible athlete.
Athlete and engine, totally.
Giant brain.
But brain. That's what I was getting to.
A high-speed sprint. I think that we don't understand some of the stuff that goes into. So, Sean O'Shea is one of the fastest players in Kerry. Does everybody know that? I didn't know that. Somebody told us that recently. Mm. It's just that he has that ability to do those shuttle runs faster, more regularly than everybody else. Like, Kilkenny's ability to control a game where loads of fans are like, oh, what are you doing? Are you taking too much out of the ball? Even Dermot Connolly says it. And it's like, he's killing the game. You're winning this game because he has had. Paddy does it because he's got a left foot and pings those passes. Everybody's like, wow, we've never seen anything like this. Kilkenny would do similar numbers of possessions and keep it, and Dublin's metronomic style sucked the life out of games, and then their scorers would deliver 115, 116, 117, and it's game over. So, like, I think that he's probably one of the most underrated footballers that we've had in the last decade.
Totally, and I would have gotten to most of that.
Sorry.
I meant it in a complimentary way. That's why he was able to be successful, and it is interesting that somebody who on paper or on face value doesn't match up to certain players in intercounty football, but his brain and his ability to control
the game. Why was he scouted to go to Australia as a 17-year-old? Why was he a standout underage Gaelic footballer and hurler? They were all that group who came through on his team could have played hurling and football for Dublin. The premise of your argument is that there's nothing special about him.
No. That's not at all what I'm saying. I mean, as a physical specimen of a player, he has an engine and he's really intelligent and he's able to control the game, and he's, you know, he is, as you said, he was the cog in that Dublin team for so many years that made it run smoothly and make the team actually tick. But what I'm saying is, if you lined him up against certain athletes on face value and you took their traits,
I'd say,
without taking any of the rest of the account, you wouldn't have said he stood out amongst the tallest, the strongest, the fastest, or the best shooters.
The middleweights.
Yet he has 7 All-Ireland titles because he was a phenomenal brain.
8, I think. 8. The middleweights. The middleweights don't look like the most physically impressive, but they are, because they're the ones who can go at high speed for 3-minute rounds, take all the punishment from somebody.
Yeah.
You know, the heavyweights, they look great.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know. I think he would have been like pound for pound. I mean, look, there's a hierarchy, and for me, it's
yeah.
For me, James McCarthy is right up there. Yeah. Arthur's not here to shout me down.
Yeah,
I get away with it. Him and Fenton, from that group. Connolly sits totally separate.
It's a different thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Very interested to hear what Jim Gavin has to say.
Look, it's an incredible makeup of a team.
Like, his leap was outrageous.
He'd one of the most unique kicking techniques as well.
Yeah,
it was like that. That was just him. Very distinct. Like, yeah. You know, when you see like the NBA logo, like, you know exactly who it is, and all that sort of stuff. It's like that. It's like if you've got a silhouette of
yeah, they do this.
You would know who it is.
The silhouette test in golf.
Yeah, I see. Brian Fenton was obviously put out a tweet yesterday. Naturally enough, after it was announced, and the first line of his tweet is, "We all march to the beat of CK's drum," and I think that probably goes for on and off the pitch in the fact that he was the tempo setter on it, and I imagine the standard bearer of it for such a long period of time, from such a young age to now. And he's not that old, don't get me wrong, but we've spoken about this loads before in the GAA about players retiring, maybe not what we would stereotypically describe as old, but
there's some talk he might hurt for a year.
Yeah, I'd love to see it.
That'd be amazing.
Love to see it, yeah. But he just seems like I don't know Kieran Kilkenny at all, but just seems like a A1 fella.
Only met him once, unbelievably.
Yeah
Craig, like, you know the way you meet loads of people and they're insincerely interested.
Yeah,
he was like
yeah.
genuinely curious about stuff and good company.
Yeah.
I should say that I was trying to be very complimentary of Kieran Kilkenny's
you ruined it, Andy.
Career there. It was more so
if he
did a GAA combine, if we had that, like, would he have been the fastest or the strongest or the tallest?
You know, the thing about the combine is that it measures everything and puts out a score. I bet you he's like elite. When you combine the thing about the combine is we did a session out in NIAC is where it was, and the dub scores were all on the board. Cluxton was the number one for like several of them.
Right.
Which was like, what? I didn't know this. His athleticism. They do stuff like cone tests.
Yeah.
Mm. Again, let's ask Jim.
Yeah, we'll ask him in a couple of weeks.
Do you think he would have been kind of middle of the pack for combine?
No, I'm not saying that, because he would, like,
I'd say also the explosive power.
He clearly had an incredible engine that allowed him to be what he was
in crucial
moments. Strength, he was quite strong, but I suppose I'm simplifying it down to
he's not
particularly fast, and he doesn't stand out as a physical specimen on paper.
I'd say.
And then he goes on to we also did think Anthony Gordon was small, and then he was 6 foot tall. So
yeah.
Look,
Seamus Flanagan walks in here and you're like, wow, you're massive.
Overall, I am saying Kieran Kenny was a phenomenal footballer.
Yeah.
That is what I'm saying. I want to get that crystal clear. He had an amazing ability of popping up in behind the defences as well and getting the ball on the inside.
It's
the clip of his goal against Leash, and he's Leash he scores against. It's one of the Leinster teams anyway, where he just hits it on the volley. It just comes up over the top, and it's like you should just catch that and, you know, tap it in, but he just smacks it on the volley into the bottom corner. I'd be intrigued to know whether the outside perception of where ranking is obviously one of those things that we do and no one else really does, like, you know, in the media and all that sort of thing. But I'd love to know if our perception and the wider public perception of Kieran Kilkenny marries up to what those within the Dublin camp would have as well. Because I know there's an unbelievable appreciation for him across the country. But I imagine that appreciation goes even further within the Dublin camp too, for what he offered that team. And I suppose there's no better man than Jim Gavin to probably tell us.
It would be interesting to hear what the players have to say as well, about like who they look to in the moments. Because there's so many of them.
Yeah.
Like, we had Jack McCaffrey and we had Mannion. We had Bernard Brogan. We had Alan Brogan.
Oh, yeah. Is it Kieran Kilkenny that Jack O'Connor goes up to walking off the pitch after one of the All-Ireland finals? Is it Kilkenny? I saw that floating around there. Someone might be able to tell me that. Jack O'Connor goes up to someone anyway, and gives him a hug. He goes out of his way. Like, I think it's after Kerry have won it, or maybe, or no, it would have to after a Dublin win, maybe. Not sure anyway.
That'd be a good retelling of events by them all now, as one goes after the other of the iconic generation of what exactly happened at that wedding.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly how it played out. We've heard the generalities of it. That, well, we all got together at this wedding and we started chatting, but like, who initiated it? Did it start off as a joke? Did it become more serious as the points went further if they were drinking? How far into the night / the next morning did this go? And then they wake up the next morning energized, or what did we talk about last night? What did we promise that you were drunk and either are actually going to do? Because it's amazing that a lot of them reference it and put that out there at all.
And then don't do it.
Because you know, I would say that Dublin generation, among loads of attributes, are pretty private. We don't really know a lot about how they did a lot of their things. And we're talking more and more with Jim Gavin about that. But the fact that this wedding is out there voluntarily by the participants, that's how much it meant to them. That's what we heard in, was it 2023, wasn't it? That All-Ireland, that's when it came out? I think it was.
It was 2023, the comeback win they had, wasn't it? Or was it?
Yeah, that's when they were talking about the year before.
No, sorry, it was 23 they won and 24 they lost the Galway, I think, wasn't it? Yeah. Sorry, Carol Dillon points out it was 2022 semi-final after Kerry beat Dublin. Jack O'Connor went up to Kieran Kilkenny when he was leaving the pitch. He had a bit of a conversation, just a kind of another sign of
game recognising game.
Yeah, the regard in which he was held.
Somebody in the comments asking about, are we going to have any hurling on the show today? We'll talk to Tommy about the start of the build-up to the All-Ireland Hurling Final. It is... everything's very compressed now. It feels very, very compressed.
Yeah.
Tommy Welsh is going to be in studio with us on Friday. Looking forward to that one.
Studio. That's class. I'm not going to be here. I've never met Tommy Welsh. I want to meet Tommy Welsh. Make that happen.
You can come in on your day off if you want.
I could come in, yeah, it's true.
The first time he came into the studio was around the time he started doing the punditry for us. And I remember it was an amazing All Ireland Finals preview where he spoke about his All-Ireland experiences and what he did in the build-up to it. And I think the funniest part from it that I remember was that he never packed a bag beforehand, never changed the way he went about things, because he said if he packed his bags before the morning before or the night before the game, he was putting too much pressure on himself and he was sort of changing what he would normally do. So he wakes up the All-Ireland final day, runs around the gaff, throws everything in, no thought process behind it. And I just thought that was amazing. Like, you're going into one of the biggest games you'll ever play. I know Kilkenny back then, you probably would be smart enough to say, I'll be back, but sometimes you're not. Sometimes things happen. And I thought it was pretty interesting.
You gotta highlight that one.
Yeah, sorry. Aaron Macca with an incredible suggestion in the comments. Get Tommy Walsh on the crappy quiz.
Might happen on Friday.
It's the day of it. Yeah.
Oh, that'd be something else.
Do you think Galway have a chance?
Yeah, very much. Yeah. Now, you'll win nothing with kids, right? Says Alan Hansen, but famously Man United did. And it's kind of the same. Can the kids who have been brilliant in the semi-finals and both semi-finals continue into the finals? If they do, then we're going to have all-time classic games, whether or not they win or lose. Like, if Kobe and Byrne play brilliantly for Mayo, they'll be in the game. If Rabbit can play brilliantly, then I think they have a chance. Just the way they're going to line up. Stars make fights, and I think that there's a stylistic opportunity for Galway against Limerick. Having said that, obviously, the giant brain of Canark has been plodding away for the last 8 days, going, okay, I see you. I know what you're doing. So we'll see.
This is the weekend that we've been talking about for nearly a year now. This one coming. Ireland, New Zealand is at 8:10, isn't it? Saturday morning. And then on Sunday, what about Sundays? You have the All-Ireland final, the conclusion of the Open, the World Cup final.
A lot on.
July 19th.
Yeah.
What, power rank how excited you are for those three things? Take the rugby away because it's Saturday, Sunday. Which is going to be the peak?
Well, like, look, if it's Shane Lowry coming down 18, going toe-to-toe with McIlroy, then suddenly that elevates it, right? But without that...
Okay. I'll give you a scenario then for the golf, right? Is that McIlroy and Lowry are both in contention, turning onto the back nine?
Well, that'd be great. Mm. But World Cup final every 4 years.
Yeah.
Look, that might never happen again, you know? The Lowry and McIlroy in contention.
That would coincide with the second half of the All-Ireland final.
So, Kerry people always complain that it's only ever a classic when they get beaten, right? So if Limerick win a great game against Galway, and it's their fifth, sixth, we're all like, that's good, fair play to you, it's great that the game is good. But if Galway turn them over in a classic, then suddenly that's amazing. And then let me give you this scenario. Galway win a classic and England win 3-0.
Ooh.
Give me your excitement levels for all this now.
Yeah. You've turned it on me. Ideally, Argentina beat England and then France beat Argentina and we're all happy. But
I think it's a France-England final.
Yeah, I agree. I agree, yeah, wholeheartedly. I don't think Argentina have got anywhere near enough.
And I'm hoping that Michael Olise scores a hat-trick.
Yeah.
Another English hat-trick in a World Cup final.
Yeah, that'd be great. That'd be great. I think regardless of what the World Cup final is, that would be top of my list anyway. Then the hurling, then the golf. But again, it depends on what happens in the games, you know. If the World Cup final is dreadful and the hurling final is unbelievable, then there you go. Off the ball,
GAA. Does anyone here think Mayo are going to win the All-Ireland final? No, thank you. So that question is nonsense. If our supporters want to enjoy it, let them enjoy it.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50mg film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150mg tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.